You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast here on BQN and the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Amy, and with me today, couldn't do it without him, Mark and Christos. Hello, guys.
Hello, hello, hello. Together again.
Amy, this is kind of shaping up to be like a reverse Charlie's Angels, where you're our Charlie.
I will take it, please.
Oh, yes. No. We're all angels here. Charlie is like older and just the wise one that gives the orders.
Yeah, we're the three angels.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Well, you guys, Prodigy is now out. Yes. How are you liking it?
So, I've only watched last week's. I have not watched today's yet. It's still early here on the West Coast.
Okay, good. So that's perfect because none of us have seen episode two. Most of our listeners have already seen episode one. So coming back to Prodigy, like it is a transition going from Lower Decks to Prodigy, but what a wonderful transition. All those characters.
I had Christos? A house guest last week who doesn't watch Star Trek, but had to sit through both of those episodes. but he did fine. But yeah, talk about like, and I was actually talking about this on What's the T-Bev last week. Because also, I'm doing all this, and then I'm like watching Andor. So we're watching Star Wars, right? And that's like completely different mindset. So you're jumping around. You have to kind of like plug yourself in and out of this stuff. But I did Lower Decks first to just kind of wrap that up. And I really enjoyed the way things wrapped up the season for the most part. But then, and the new Prodigy's back, and I felt like it's back and strong.
Mark?
I liked the way that Prodigy ended. It was strange that they didn't do a two-parter. Usually they end up on a two-parter. But I did like the episode. I think, you know, it's... I liked almost every episode this season. I think season two of Prodigy, I think, was a little stronger. I think what was weighted down for season three for me was the one-off peanut hamper episode was just like a stinker. But it wasn't just that one. The first few episodes for me just weren't as strong as what they did in season two. But I ended up... It grew on me. It grew on me. And the last episode was, I think, one of the strongest outings for Lower Decks. Now, with Prodigy, we're still technically in season one. This is like season one part B, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I like where they're going with it. I'm trying to figure out in my head, I know this has been discussed around the network, on whether or not it's too early to bring in Chakotay or not. I don't know where I sort of sit with that. Because I'm kind of going to get Chakotay. Like, I can't wait to see him. And I can't wait for the Prodigy crew that's on the Protostar to be able to meet with the Federation and everybody be cool. But I get that they got to drag it out because they're probably going to make it the whole arc of that first season. And so that's going to be, what, over 20 episodes. And right now we're only on episode, what, this is 11? So they have a ways to go as far as that's concerned, which is great for kids. Because, you know, once they have A and B of season one, they can just binge the heck out of it, which they will, and I'm sure we will as well. But I don't know. I love the animation style, and there's some cool characters on there. I just wish I had a Murph toy. I couldn't make it to New York Comic Con to get a Murph toy. But if anybody out there has one and wants to mail me one, listen, I won't say no, so thanks.
Yeah, I did not realize how much I missed Al. I really wanted... Oh, I just missed him. And it was a transition, and I wish that they would have given us that extra week. I don't know why, in this day and age of streaming, that they have to overlap episodes. If anyone can answer me that logically... Yeah. I would love it. I'm sure it's money-based. I have no idea why. And then one thing I really noticed, because I recently rewatched all the episodes up until the first 10 episodes, they need to develop Jenk and Pog a little bit more. They've really done a good job with Rock Talk, right? And with the eyeball one. The what's Medusan. That's name?
Well, he's a Medusan. I forget what his character's name is.
Fred. But... I think it's Fred. Yeah. Pretty sure.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, this is why we don't podcast about Prodigy. but, like, he's... Yeah, I want to see more... Okay. With him equal okay. to what we've seen with Rock Talk.
I think, to all your point, it's a little early. I mean, there's only been 11 episodes. They're about 23, 24 minutes each. How much screen time have these characters really had? And they said it in last week's episode. It's only been a few weeks since they were liberated. In the show's time, only a few weeks have gone by since the kickoff of the show in real time of the show. So I feel like there's still a lot to unpack, a lot to happen out. You know, we're on episode 11 of 40 conceived episodes. So I think there's plenty more to come. Yeah. But
yeah, there is. I'm just hoping to see that proportional to what we've seen growth with others.
And I'm hoping that comes in the next few episodes. I agree. I don't know why they're doubling up, especially when I believe after Prodigy, we're going to have a pretty big lull between Picard season 3. Yeah. So why would you blow a week? And they did that early in the year too with Picard overlapping with Discovery and Discover, and then Picard overlapping with Strange New Worlds. I'm like, do you remember watching the finale of Picard and the premiere of Strange New Worlds in the same night? That's like you're causing too much noise and they're canceling each other out.
Yes. And I've complained about it every single time. So I am being consistent. I don't like the overlap. And we did have the overlap on the cruise, if you remember.
No. I just remember falling asleep watching those on the cruise because I was drinking a little too much and you put me in a theater with it dark. And no.
All right. Well, hey, we have some feedback from our listeners. Christos, you want to read that?
So yes, Big Brian NC of SC on Twitter said, "You mentioned something like, wait, weren't those fish people eating fish? Well, that's sort of a land-centric view. It's sort of like saying, wait, weren't those land animals eating other land animals or mammals eating mammals? Or, yep, happens all the time. Fish eat fish and land animals eat land animals. I think you guys had stayed on that. Had you guys stayed on that a few more seconds, you would have caught that perspective shift yourselves." Yeah, that's very true. Personally, I don't eat animals anymore, but I gave that up about 3 years ago. But yes, it is pretty much a natural thing on land for animals to eat animals and humans to eat animals. And we're animals too. And fish eat fish. Mm-hmm. So that's a very, very, very good perspective. And thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it until I read the comment. Yeah. But yeah, I guess while watching it, it looked stranger to me, but it could have been the costumes too, or the big vats of krill. I don't know, or Mick Fleetwood. I don't know. It could have been a combination of things. I just found the whole thing weird.
You know, it's so funny that you say Fleetwood because that's Mac. We get it. But every time I just envision a shower curtain costume. Like that's.
Yeah, it does.
I'm like, oh yeah, those are the shower curtain aliens. Got it. Yeah,
that's spot on.
You gotta give it to the makeup artist though that week because they came up with something that is we're still talking about almost 40 years later. So it was memorable enough to remember. So
exactly, Mark. What time is it?
Oh, now it's time for All Good World.
From Las Vegas to Boston, USA, to Canada and South America, from the United Kingdom to South Africa, from Russia to Australia, the South Pacific and beyond, this is All Good World.
Each episode we highlight a different location around the globe where this podcast has reached, and today's episode we would absolutely love to give a special shout out to our listeners in Singapore. Now, I saw our listeners in Singapore. We have a ton, and this is great. So thank you all for listening in Singapore. There's quite a few of you. Well, fun fact for today, officially the Republic of Singapore is a sovereign island country and city-state in maritime Southeast Asia. The country's territory is composed of one main island and 63 satellite islands. I had no idea. And one outlying islet. The combined area of which has increased 25% since the country's independence as a result of extensive land reclamation projects. It has become the third highest population density in the entire world. So no wonder we have some listeners there. That's awesome.
Wow. So the other two I would assume China and India would be the most populated by density.
But when thinking about the increase in the land mass by 25%, I'm not sure what it is for Boston, but since the city of Boston was founded, the land mass for Boston has increased, I would guess, at least 25%. Because they've taken a whole lot of like the hillside and stuff in the North End, and when they dug out to make Boston Common, they took all of that dirt and they just kept spreading it out. And now, what is a large amount of downtown Boston is actually what used to be underwater at the time when America was being founded. So that's kind of interesting too, if you ever come to visit.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
We've just been edumacated about Boston and Singapore.
We got some things in common.
Yeah. Well, today, listeners, we are going to continue our addiction series, part two, by covering Next Gen's season 5, episode 6, The Game. Now, previously covered episodes, we covered was TNG's Symbiosis.
One of my favorites.
Which was, listeners, if you want to go back and listen, that was episode 80 of All Good Things.
And recently revisited on Lower Decks.
Yes, very true. I know, I went back to look at that because I'm like, I feel like we've talked about Symbiosis recently, but that was because of Lower Decks. Yep, very good. All right, Christos, what is The Game about in case anyone doesn't know what The Game is?
Let me ponder this because it's been so long since I've seen this episode. But so basically, Riker is on Risa doing what Riker does best, getting into trouble with the women's. And he falls hook, line, and sinker for this gal who basically puts a mind control game on him and sends him back to the Enterprise to basically spread the game very quickly throughout the Enterprise to get the entire Enterprise crew hooked on the game. So basically, they can effectively take over the planet. Take over the ship, but eventually take over Starfleet. I mean, they plans to go beyond that. And while that's all going on, we have Wesley Crusher's first visit to the Enterprise since leaving the show the prior season. So it's been about a year since we had seen Wesley. So it's his first time coming back as a guest star, and we kind of catch up with Wesley Crusher and his
birthmark.
For the week. That too. Ashley Judd as the guest star.
All right. Well, Mark, what's your initial thoughts? What are you thinking about The Game?
Oh, I always like this episode. I always like the episodes of Star Trek where there's this sort of cat and mouse game and people have to hide around the ship. Those are always fun episodes for me, and in this episode it was Wesley Crusher and Robin Loeffler who have to hide from the crew that are trying to force them to play this addictive game. And so I don't know, that was fun, and watching everybody slowly turn, I don't know, it's a fun episode. This is definitely one that I enjoy whenever I watch.
Christos?
I actually, for whatever reason, this is on my list of episodes I tend to avoid it. I'm not sure, like, after watching it again today, I'm like, do I not like this episode? Do I like this episode? Why do I not like this episode if I don't watch it very frequently? But I don't know. I enjoyed it today. I don't know why I avoid it. In fact, there was a lot of things that felt new to me because I don't see it all the time. It's not my go-to episode to binge when I am catching, when I'm doing some TNG time. But I think it's a strong episode. It's if I had to rate it, it's about a 7.5 on a 10, which is strong. The season five is generally a strong season.
Wow. Yeah. I love the game. And it was just, I was like, well, I was debating going back and forth. Should I watch it or not? Because I've seen it so much. I definitely could talk a lot about it. But I went and watched it again. And it holds up. Like, this is a strong episode. The characters are good. Like, I love the chemistry between Wesley and Robin Loeffler. Like, there's something authentic between them. They're a good age to be having a fun little fling. Like, when Wesley's in the Dolphin, I feel like he's too young to be, you know, really in that relationship type of thing.
Yeah, this is like sophomore college age for him. So it seems appropriate, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a more appropriate. And Mark, I was thinking, I got the chills a couple times because it was almost a little scary, especially when they're like, everyone's addicted to it and we're the only ones left or something along
when
that line. When
they were talking forward, it was really creepy.
Yeah, it was creepy. Yeah. And then when they were like forcing the device on Wesley on the bridge, like the sacredness of the bridge and you're forcing this onto someone going against
it's your mom and your mom's doing it and
right
and you're and basically and everybody like, you look up to
yes, this is Fear Factor, seriously. It was really good. And they do talk about this psychotropic addiction, which is, of course, why we are referencing this on our addiction series.
Right. So that's perfect for one of my, I guess, something. Maybe you guys can help me through this in my headcanon. But I had a really hard time wondering why you see some of the crew members playing the game and they're literally vegetables. Like, they're vegetables. But then you have other people like Riker and Beverly who are super high performing and being actually devious. They're not just being influenced by the game. They are acting completely out of character and acting against the Enterprise's what it needs to do. It's not, they're not just spreading the game. In fact, it's only the bridge crew that eventually ends up in on it while everybody else is just a victim of it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's runs parallel to the drug industry of those who are pushing it versus those who are addicted to it. You know, there's a level in that system.
But I guess
it might be tailored poor person too, from what you were saying, Christos. Like, I don't know if, you know, in my head canon, I would think that maybe the bridge crew were maybe given a special set of headsets or theirs were programmed a little different than the ones for the crew. Because, yeah, I agree with you. Like, they were the only ones that seemed to not be vegetables.
Well, yeah, because, like, they when they do the analysis of it, it's like, well, yeah, this would affect your reason, your ability to reason and things like that. So, yeah, that's what we see happen to, you know, 98% of the people on the ship. But, like I said, Beverly, Riker, eventually Worf and Picard, they're all acting like they've been taken over and they've been reprogrammed, like literally reprogrammed, and they're acting against Starfleet. So, but to your point, maybe there's some way, it's like a hypnotic thing. Once you're under the influence, you can be brainwashed or something. I don't know. That's how we'll make it okay.
Well, and go with me on this. Do you think that, and I have no idea, I literally am asking, do you think that the level of sharpness of your brain makes a difference on how effective it is? So, like, to your point, like, a sharp Picard brain is going to take longer to become this, you know, comatose, do as I say, versus someone who isn't as sharp, like has a weaker mind, that they would be able to, you know, fall into that addiction faster. And Picard has additional responsibilities that, like, he has to do these things, whereas, like, a lower decker, I'll skip my shift, right?
Yeah, I gotcha. I don't buy that, but okay. I like it a little bit. I like it a little bit. I do think there's probably something there about reasoning. I'll buy in on that, but I don't think that. I think there's a big difference between, like, Beverly to the point where she's going to dismantle and sabotage Data. That's, like, that's sinister.
Well,
yeah, but something made her do that. I don't think, like, Nurse Ogawa is going to think to turn Data off.
Yeah, no, I think Beverly deactivating Data is in line, but for her to turn on Wesley, there is no way in hell that a mother like Beverly would flip-flop and, you know, make Wesley do that. There's no way. No, Mama Bear is not going
to
do that.
I think what we're all agreeing on is there needed to be a little bit more dialogue there to explain the mind control aspect for some of the crew versus just sidelining the rest of the crew.
So I wanted to ask, obviously this is about video games. What video game has been detrimental to you? Now I will fess up, listeners. I have some games that I love playing. They're on my iPad and iPhone and everywhere that I am. They're my little apps, and they're card games, and they're just ridiculous. Oh, my favorite one is Fill the Balls in the Tube, the organizing that. I was late to the recording of this podcast because of this stupid game. I was playing this card game, and then I get a text message from Mark, "Where are you?" And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, this is exactly what we are trying to talk about." And I fell victim.
These games, Amy.
It's such a release because I just focus and then the rest of the world doesn't exist for
too long.
Too much time, I must admit. I'm sorry to say this is that we're having a little intervention for me. But that really has only been my experience. Like back in video games, I didn't really have them. I played them at friend's house or at the arcade. I didn't really get into that. But I'm telling you, these app games, these card games, that is where I'm falling victim. So have you guys had any detrimental examples that you would like to share?
I currently don't play much at all video games. I have a hard time having interest in them lately. But in the past, like I played the heck out of like Star Trek Armada 1 and 2, like when I was younger and things like that. But yeah.
And how was it a detriment though?
I can't think of how many productive hours I probably lost from doing something, learning a skill, doing something, you know, more productive with my time, other than, you know, building up Starfleets big enough that I can defeat the Borg.
Mark?
As a kid, I was really into, like, Star Wars games. I liked those. I never had, like gaming consoles per se, everything, so it was like PC based, you know, so like they had some Star Wars games I could play, and then Diablo, that's like this game where you're like, you could be like wizards or like knights and stuff and go and fight like these like evil creatures in the underworld. And they came out with a new version a few years back, well, a while back now, but I remember playing that too, and you just kind of get lost in it. You're like, oh, I can make it to this level, and oh, I got past this guy, and it's like, all of a sudden, you know, it's like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, like, oh, I gotta be up in the morning, I have work to do. Mm-hmm. So time can kind of escape you, but at least with me, when it comes to games like that, I have a period of time where I'm addicted. And I will play it all day, all night, and I'll be crazy about it, but it literally only lasts like a couple of weeks, and then I'm done. And when I'm done, I just walk away and I don't touch the game again. It just sort of happens. I just get bored with it. I get bored of being immersed and I realize, oh, wait, no, I have another life outside of this computer game. And I just make the conscious choice to just drop it and just go and like live my life.
Same. Yeah, I've been like that in the past. When I play a game, I'll just suddenly become bored with it. Like, it'll just be like a moment. Like, it just comes over you. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for that to happen with me with that ball sort one.
Too many of those endorphins going off in your head.
I know. For me, that ball sort, it's organizing. And I love organizing things. So, yeah, I do literally get endorphins from organizing the cards or organizing the balls.
Christos? No, I was going to say, you know, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, this Star Trek Legends game came out on Apple Arcade. And I played it all the damn time. And then suddenly I played it less and less and less. And now I'm like, oh, it's still on my phone. I just opened it up for the first time in ages. Mm. I hope I didn't reopen something there. But yeah, I think there's a time you just decide you had enough. But Amy, I think for your thing, I think you're getting it. It's like when you complete that puzzle, so to speak, or whatnot, it is a sense of accomplishment, like getting a disc into a cone, and it's giving you some sort of release, like a sense of accomplishment. Yes. And you feel good about yourself, and there's order to the world, and that might help some OCD thing going on there.
Yes. Oh, man, Christos, you're like peering into my soul here.
Those glasses can do a lot.
Yes. All right. So going back sort of and off of your comment, Christos, do we even believe that Picard, knowing his responsibility, he is responsible for the entire ship and its crew. His mind is so sharp. Do we really believe that Picard would be changed and get addicted to a mere game? What is the message that they're sending here? Is there one?
I think it's not so much that he could become addicted. I think obviously he can become addicted. I think it's a bigger leap to get him to try it, because I don't think that fits his personality at all. And I think, was it Beverly that like goes to see him, and we don't see him try it. It's implied that Beverly goes to see him and she had something to do with getting him to try it. So obviously she probably violated some trust there to get him to do it. Or maybe, I don't know. Where's your mind going, Amy? I can see you.
Okay. Yes. The message that they could be sending, right? We see people playing it, and if we relate that to a drug addiction, we see the addicts, we can see the physical changes in them, which is when we look around 10 forward and we see people doped out, right? But drug addiction affects what we can't see. We never see Picard wearing the game, but yet he is addicted. Just as we can look at some random person, we may not know that they are addicted to drugs.
Yep. I like that. I think there's that people cope and hide things a lot differently. Yes. I know we've all been there where we've been like, oh, you know, I had a drink and I'm trying to like, you know, sober up a little bit and not show it. Or I did something I shouldn't have done and I'm trying to pull it together to not give away that I may have had a drink or two at lunch or that I, you know. So I think, to your point, or people in more extreme circumstances, to your point, trying to hide that they are addicted to something. So they do everything they can to look and act, quote unquote, normal.
Yeah. And there's a thing, functional alcoholics, functional drug addict. Mark?
So, I mean, we do see Picard wearing it at one point.
Do we?
You had mentioned that he didn't. But as soon as Wesley leaves he sort of turns and puts it on. We don't see him make the orgasm face. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, we do see him wearing it. You had made a comment about, you know, you don't know what people are going through when you see him on the street. Like, some people could be battling with this issue or that issue. but they just hide it really well. They get expert at hiding it through, you know, the years. And, you know, I'm a child of, you know, alcoholics. And, yeah, I only know what I saw in my own family, you know what I mean? Like, on the background, I don't know how other people perceived them. I can only imagine that they didn't necessarily know what was going on, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And, yeah, I don't know. I remember, I don't know, maybe this is an overshare for the podcast, but, like, up at home, it was a few years back, and I was visiting my family, and like my mom and dad and I and my partner, we were all going out to the woods. We were going to go for a hike or something, you know, in the day. And my dad had said, "Oh, hey, Mark, can you grab me a beer?" And I was like, "Oh, sure." And I just reached behind me into the cooler and I pulled out a beer and cracked it open for him and was passing it to the front seat where he was driving. And it was something that I had done my entire life, you know what I mean? Like, since I was, like, a little boy. And it was at that moment, like, as an adult, because it had been years separated, that I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I was just automatically doing it. But, yeah, sure, we were out in the woods and what have you, and there weren't, like, traffic or whatever. But still, it was just, like, it was one of those things where maybe I shouldn't be doing this. I didn't know that there was an issue when I was younger. And it wasn't until I grew up and became an adult and, like, started, you know, living my life and came back and then could look at it with the second set of eyes that I realized that there was anything sort of messed up about it. Because it was just what I knew,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. All right. Well, do we have any assimilation and regeneration from this episode?
I think we do. And I love the first one because this did cross my mind. We have a regeneration. How does the game affect Jordy if he can't see? So, well, he sees on an infrared spectrum, I guess, or something like that.
But he sees on all spectrums.
How do they get the thing? Well,
it connects. Yeah, right,
they would have taken his visor off to do it.
Yeah. And connect right in.
Okay.
But
that's what I figured. But
yeah, it's a little bit weird. I think that, I don't know, that could have been a better place to make it a stronger story, to either have it not quite work right or have some sort of different reaction with Jordy. You know, I think that could have been a fun way to, I guess maybe if you didn't have Wesley Crusher in this episode, that's kind of how I'd judge it up. I'd have Jordy, you know, it worked or not work or wore off faster, and then Jordy figures out what's going on with Data, goes and saves Data, and that's how I would have done the episode without Wesley Crusher.
Well, I have a regeneration for this episode. What is with Deanna's little sexy fudge talk on 10 forward? That just seems so random and out of place in this episode. Like, she's all of a sudden, it's like we're having this conversation about the game, and we're having a conversation about all these people working super hard to, like, you know, do this, accomplish this task, whatever, everybody around the ship. And then the camera pans to Deanna, who's like in 10 forward, and she's just like, oh, I just love chocolate. And I love the ritual of it when you take the spoon and you move it all around the bowl. You just scoop up some of the ice cream.
Need some time alone, Mark?
You know, it's like, what is going on?
Amy, do you want to take this or do I need to take it?
Oh.
What is going on?
Okay.
Here? What is going on with Deanna and that fudge? Come on. Nobody loves chocolate that much.
All right. So I am going to assimilate that scene.
Yeah. Got it. Get it.
That. Okay. First of all, she removes the maraschino cherry just as I would. Maraschino cherries are the worst. But her description number, I love this for two reasons. Number one, women have a right to want and desire sex. They have a right to fantasize it and they have a right to do it. So I love that we're seeing that in the 80s.
What is chocolate?
Like, or maybe early 90s by this time. Yeah. And
she was sexualizing chocolate.
Exactly. Like
chocolate ice cream.
And that is okay because men do it all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
with ice cream.
Insert another object, and yes, men do it all the time. Yes. So the second reason that I love this, and Mark, this is where really I am being serious. I mean, I am was before, but why it fits into this is because food is an addiction. And being a heavy person who has lost 120 pounds, thank you very much, 125, that addiction to food is a real thing. And I think it does highlight that. Like, do you go to food to bury your emotions? What is it about? And that is another addiction that is being, I think, talked about here. Christos?
I'll echo what you said, because it was actually meant to emulate different forms of addiction. I mean, your taste buds are pleasure centers. That's why food tastes good. That's why you enjoy some things better than others. And chocolate, it happens to be a popular one. I enjoy dark chocolate, maybe not quite on the level of Deanna Troi, but I think the idea was showing her doing something that's highly enjoyable, and then B, setting her up to be susceptible to Riker by offering her something even better than that. So that the scene was to like set up her getting pulled into it. But it was also meant to illustrate that, yeah, people do things all the time. They have habits, whether it's a game or a food or you know, lots of other things. You could be smoking, drugs. I mean, there's so many things you can be addicted to that, you know, that they get their pleasure from. So for Deanna, her escape is chocolate.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That then Riker's like, it's better than chocolate.
And for her, that puts a context. Well, if it's better than that, I got to try this.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate that you guys explained that to me. And I hadn't looked at it from that perspective as far as like fitting into the addiction storyline. But I appreciate it more now than I did. I still find it weird, but I get it now in a way that I didn't before. So thank you.
Well, and Brandon Braga, one of the writers, did say that he enjoyed writing this scene and that it was fun. So there's that also.
So Marina Sirtis, I thought I read somewhere she doesn't actually like
that. That is correct. She does not. I mean, it's not her favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
I thought we should include that a little bit.
How about what did you guys all think of Wesley's cadet uniform?
Assimilate that. I thought it was great. I love the tailoring. I love the color. What I like most about it is the fact that it's the reverse of what the actual official uniform is. So you have the official uniform where it's like, you know, you get the red on the chest and then it's black, you know, on the shoulders, and it's the reverse of that. And I thought that was a cool play to do for the cadets, where the cadets aren't, you know, serving yet, so they're not going to have the uniform, but they'll have a nod to it. And I really appreciate that.
That's not the first time we saw them, right? Don't we see the cadet uniform in Allegiance when Picard's locked up with those three other people and there's a fit?
Isn't that after
season three. Where Big Picard is on the Enterprise trying to get with Beverly and fooling everybody. Yeah, I think that's late season three. Amy is researching, folks. Stand by. Please enjoy this music.
Yes, Oh my gosh, you are so right. Season three, episode 18.
Mm-hmm. Somebody called Trexperts. I do know something about Star Trek. It's not a whole lot about DS9 season two.
Well,
we're talking to you, Davey.
Oh my gosh!
I was gonna say too, and I really like that. That I think the idea was so popular that it became the DS9 Voyager episode uniform, pretty much.
You know, I really noticed how good looking and well put together Wesley Crusher was. Like, I think this is, as far as teenager time zone of Will Wheaton, this is his best look. His hair's on point, the uniform, he's at the good age appropriate to be, you know, with Robin Loeffler. Like, everything is working for Wesley. This is his, in my opinion, best looking episode
ever. Yeah, I think this one and First Duty, which are like really close together. They're both in the same season and everything. Yeah, I agree.
Well, yeah, so I like this one better because he's the hero and not the one causing the pain.
True, it is a little bit different storyline just a few episodes down the road.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I have another assimilation, and this one is the hide and seek on the Enterprise. Yeah, I just like episodes where, you know, like there's an episode where Picard is left on the ship during the Baryon sweep or whatever, and he has to run through the corridors and stuff like that. It's like, I like these episodes where the ship itself is also a character. And I miss that with, like, a lot of the modern Trek. I think they had one episode of Discovery where Burnham was, like, sort of crawling around, you know, or one or two. But they're not able to do as much, obviously, because there's not as many episodes. But you really feel like the Enterprise D is as much a character as any of the actors. So
yeah, I think that's that. Part of not having as many freestanding sets as they did back in 90s Trek. There's a lot of Trek reuse and redress of sets and green screens and video walls, the AV walls that they use now.
You know, that's a really good point, because we get to see him crawling through the Jeffrey tubes and then the force fields coming up and him setting the phaser, that cute little tiny...
Type 1.
PowerPoint clipper.
Type 1.
Yeah.
Yes. So you've got your PowerPoint clicker shooting, you know, so we get to see the force fields and they're running through the corridors. Like, yeah, it is a fun hide and seek on the Enterprise. I like that.
Oh, they also do it in Rascals, which just had its anniversary, didn't it? Within the last week, it was the anniversary of its initial airing. So I did an assimilation, but I also have a regeneration, and I want to mention the Sadie Hawkins dance. I really think that gendered dances like that won't be around much longer. I don't even think they happen much anymore, but where, oh, it's the female asking the male. It's like, you know, and especially like in 24th century, I think we're going to have a healthier... I guess, relationship with gender and with social norms and even, you know, sexuality, where I think in the I'm going to go out on a limb and say, and Christos, I want your opinion on this, and Amy, yours too, feel free to chime in, but I feel like in the 24th century, we'll live in a world where a male that identifies maybe as bisexual or gay could ask out another male that might be straight, that just might not have a date, and they will go together and they will dance together and have a good time and then leave. I think that eventually as a society we'll evolve to the point where we can have these sort of interactions socially without the stigma of like, oh, did you see that guy dancing with that other guy?
Go visit Gen Z. It's happening already. I mean, there's a lot of guys in their 20s that, you know, they may even identify as straight, but they just homosexuality, bi, whatever, it doesn't bother them. And they've even been known to, you know, do whatever feels good, but still identify as heterosexual. As long as we don't have a complete collapse of our society anytime soon, I think we're heading that way.
So do you think that's fair assessment, that there will not be a Sadie Hawkins?
Well, Amy's our perpetual date. Look at her.
No, listen, I am working with the youth of our generation, and I can tell you there's no more Sadie Hawkins. The last I remember that, I watched the episode and I'm like, oh, that aged the episode immediately, took me out of it. And I'm like, because that's 80s, 90s Sadie Hawkins. I have been teaching for 20 years. There has not been a Sadie Hawkins. I've taught in Texas, I've taught in Nevada, and in Utah. The last I saw Sadie Hawkins was when I was in school. It's not happening. They're not having this type of dance, which I am very grateful for. So I think it already is in that transition mode.
Good.
Yeah.
It can die.
Yes. So, yes, I had an assimilation, but I also have a regeneration. And my goodness, Mark Christos, when I come to visit you, don't you dare put me to work. Why would they do that to Wesley? He's on vacation. He hasn't seen his mother and all of his friends. Come on. I mean, I know they did it for the story, but it was lame.
But that's just fun also. Like, he was a small kid and he was doing experiments, like in the science lab and stuff, you know, the nanites and whatnot. But like, he likes...
He's a nerd. He enjoys it.
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
The only work I will give you to do, Amy, is to open the bottle of wine.
I will do that work. Okay. Yes. Okay. All right, guys, we got some trivia here.
All right. So Fred Bronson, story writer, recalled, "It was based on the fact that I had a Tetris game on my computer at home. Whenever I wanted to distract myself, I would play Tetris, and it was very addictive."
This is nuts trivia. So the game, TNG episode, it was sort of based on Tetris?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Game Boys were big.
It does.
Time period. I mean, I understand that.
Ooh, hey.
Oh. There's an AI taking over Christos' apartment.
Woo.
Woo. Man, she was going on.
Control of going on and on. That's never happened.
So Brandon Braga compared the plot of this episode to Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Jerry Taylor commented, "Through an evolutionary process, without really intending to ape that movie, this insidious spread of the game has its origins in kids being addicted to video games now, and what happens to them. That was the original intent, and that's what drove the final story and script. That insight followed the development," Braga added. "It's ironic to have the adolescents come back to find all the adults are addicted to a game, which is something you would expect the other way around." So that is interesting that they flipped it, you know, because it's like, oh, all the kids are addicted to the video games, and they flip the script in this.
Yeah, I like that.
Like I said, it works for me. I can make it work with or without Wesley, but I think Wesley being there really helps give it that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Brent Spiner recalls that during production of this episode, the scene wherein Data is deactivated by Dr. Crusher and falls down onto the biobed, Spiner actually hit the bed so hard he cut his chin and had to go to the hospital. After returning to the set, they immediately asked Spiner to do the scene again.
Ruthless.
I know, right? Oh, you just got, you know, come back from the hospital.
Hey, can I see?
Roll.
Can I see the outtake?
I know, right?
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, I guess maybe he hit it so hard that it's like, maybe he didn't stay in character too. So it probably ruined the take.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ah. Yeah.
I don't think he screams like that, Christos, but anyway, keep going.
Watch it. So kind of a morbid little trivia here. The game was the first episode to air following Gene Roddenberry's death on October 24th, 1991. And do y'all know which episode actually acknowledges Gene Roddenberry?
No.
There's a thing for Gene Roddenberry at the beginning of Unification.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Okay. I thought you meant like in the episode.
No, my gosh, racking my brain.
Yeah. At the credits. Yeah,
they probably didn't have enough time because, like, you know, those were back in the days when the copies went out via syndication and they probably didn't have time to. Plus, it's kind of fitting that it's in this Unification being kind of an epic two-parter with Spock. A little fitting that he gets a tribute in that one. But, anyways.
Yeah.
Is that the next episode in,
airing,
in the series?
It is.
Yeah. It is. Okay.
Yep. So Brandon Braga admitted that he hit on Ashley Judd during filming, but was, quote, dutifully ignored. Okay, I'm not sure how I feel about this.
I mean,
Ashley Judd was very young, 17, at the time. Ooh. And I don't know how old Brandon Braga was, but she is still 17. Yeah. So I'm just going to leave that there.
Well, and then he eventually hit on Jeri Ryan and dated her. I mean, it seems to be a workplace mm-hmm. thing for him. Like, I don't think he might have a hard time in today's work environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would have been, he would not be still working.
Fraternization is frowned upon on the Enterprise.
Yes, it is.
Well, the Katarian ship is a redress of the Terrarium. The Terrarium plague ship from Haven. whatever.
You want to read that again or no? You leaving it in?
No.
Okay. It's from,
I don't know.
It's from Haven. This is the one with Wyatt and Deanna Troi's prearranged marriage. I was so happy to see it again. Of course, I like Haven and I like Deanna Troi, but I saw that ship and I was like, yep, there you go.
It does feature that really bad hairstyle that Beverly has at that dinner, though.
Oh, yes, that is true.
So 47 reference, Nurse Ogawa is on level 47.
All right, you guys, real quick, what did you think about the game and how does it fit in with our addiction series? Christos, let's start with you.
So I will gladly say the game is kind of back on my rotation of episodes that I won't skip over. I don't know what. Maybe I just don't like the idea. There are certain things I don't like about any type of TV show. I don't like when our ships get taken over by the enemy. Like, it's why I don't watch Basics in Voyager, even though it is a good episode. I don't like that kind of stuff. And so when certain things happen to on shows, I just may either like it or I don't like it. So I don't know. Maybe the addiction thing was something I didn't like. I don't know. But otherwise, it's actually a decent episode. Like I said, I give it a pretty strong rating. And I will watch it again without having to be told.
Then that is a success. Mark, what about you?
Oh, I always like this episode. This is fun. As far as addiction's concerned, yeah, this is one of the first episodes I thought about when starting this series. I was like, this would be a good episode. Because there are different types of addictions, and it's not always drug addictions. We can be addicted to a lot of things, and I think we brought that up in this episode. You can have food addiction, you can have sex addiction, you have alcohol addiction, any kinds of different addictions. And so this just focuses this week on just a different kind. And as Amy, I believe, brought up earlier, it's kind of cool that they flipped the switch where it wasn't... It's so predictable to have the kids addicted to a game, but having Riker do it, that was cool. In the whole episode, we didn't even talk about the cold open of Riker having a little fun time with an alien on a holiday. Yeah, that's another kind of addiction.
I mentioned it a little bit in my episode description. Yeah. But yes, we see Riker being... I was going to use the W word, but, just being sexually active.
I mean, Riker looked at that alien lady like, I mean, I've seen that look before. That's the same look he gave Rhea Papageorgiou. Just saying.
Jesus. Don't the exact get same really look. Excited.
I know.
I don't know if she was part excited and part mortified.
No, she likes that story. She's not afraid to talk about it. There's no mortification going on there. That's a that's a positive Rhea Papageorgiou story. That's a proud Greek.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you see with we talked about this kind of came up at work a little bit through some personality tests we've been doing, and we talk about this in the sense that like, how much of you are you your authentic self when you go to work? Like, do you put a face on? How much of you is 100% you? Are you 90% you? Are you 60% you? And, I think here we see a side of Riker that he kind of probably has to put away a lot. And he's on Risa. He's not on his ship. He's not in front of his crew. He's not an authority figure. He can just, be the little sex happy man that he is and likes to be, and he's completely relaxed and having fun, which why his guard was down to have that game introduced to him.
That's a good point. Yeah,
I think Riker probably had some because of his, I think he's a little fluid. I think he primarily likes women, but I think that if this show was made today, Riker would be,
well, not. I think the Outcast kind of showed that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's open at least. Like, eh, why not?
Jonathan Frakes would completely agree with that.
Yeah, Jonathan Frakes is,
I mean, awesome. Because of his comments on the Outcast, you know?
No, he's very progressive, and the Star Trek community, we're very lucky to have him. He's brought so much to the franchise.
All right, Christos, what are we going to talk about next week?
Next week, we'll be talking about Taking It From the Top, Lower Decks, Second Contact. I almost said Latter-day Saints. Jesus. What the fuck is LDS?
Oh, my. The official abbreviation for Lower Decks and my former religion. Yes.
So we'll be talking Second Contact next week. Yay.
Yeah, so we are discussing each of the series premieres. And so this, we are on to Lower Decks now.
Oh, that is the premiere episode. I just recently watched that, but I'll watch it again.
Taking It From the Top.
Oh, is that what? Guys, you know, you guys have all these things, and I feel like...
I know.
I feel like I'm a, you know, I feel like I'm that cast member that you just can't count on. Come on, Christos, wake up. It's our theme.
It's all good.
No, we have so many series, which is why we have to say, hey, what are we talking about? And what did we talk about? And we go backwards.
It doesn't say they're from our Taking It From the Top series.
Oh, yep. I did forget to write series.
It's okay. It's okay.
That's my bad. I'm so sorry. No,
we all know you just wanted me to say Latter-day Saints.
Christos, I don't know if you saw in the upcoming episodes, so this is going to be not, I don't think it's...
I did notice you were working on notes.
Within the next, month or so here, we're going to have, you and I had a conversation about episode ideas and series ideas, and you gave me the idea for this series, and so we are going to do a captain's chair, sort of host's favorite episodes, and so we'll rotate amongst the three of us, and be able to pick an episode at random of Star Trek to share.
I already know which one we're going to do on my week.
Why is this the first I am hearing about?
It's the first I'm hearing too. So I just did.
I put it in there. I did. Conversation.
I had been very busy at work, but I saw my phone was open, and then I saw the notes thing popped up, and then went away. And I'm like, oh, Mark's making notes adjustments on our episodes. But I'm like, okay. Yeah. All right, listeners. So
that'll be fun.
Well, that's good.
Okay.
So in 2 weeks, we'll be doing episode 98, and it will be host favorite. Is it my week then?
Yeah.
All right. Do you want me to tell our listeners what we're going to discuss?
Why not? Let's preempt it.
Yeah. So next week, we're going to talk about Lower Decks, Second Contact. And in 2 weeks, we'll be discussing TNG's The Chase. Probably my favorite Star Trek episodes ever.
Woohoo!
And Amy's got a big, Amy's smiling big. She's like, oh, TNG, I got that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Amy's getting a lot of love this month because we're probably talking the most TNG in the next few weeks than we've done in a while.
So. I appreciate it, too. Yeah.
It's like I'm on Galaxy Class.
But classier.
Well, listeners, if you like us talking about TNG, or you like us talking about Lower Decks, or Prodigy, or any of the other shows, well, let us know. You can let us know by joining our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, where you can message us there. Or you can tweet your thoughts at All Good Pod, because we love connecting with you there as well. So, check us out on Twitter at All Good Pod and Instagram at BQN Podcasts. We've also partnered with our friends at the Fandom Podcast Network, where you can find our show there by searching their master feed. So, Christos, where can people find you when you are not coldly deactivating data?
That was good.
Yeah, Beverly. Yeah.
Well, you can find me on What's the Tea, Bev, here on the BQN, both wherever you get your audio podcasts like this one and on YouTube if you want to watch the hijinks in action. We've had some very strong episodes, and this coming weekend, I'm going to be interviewing Sean Ferrick. So I'm looking forward to that. So that'll probably be recorded by the time you listeners hear this episode, actually.
I'll give that episode an up already.
Yeah. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at GreekGeekSD or at What's the TBev. And Amy, where can people find you when you're not holed up in 10 Ford making love to a chocolate sundae?
Well, you can find me here on the network in between bites of chocolate. Yeah, talking next gen on Galaxy Class. You can also listen to me on Union Federation, which is the new Star Trek and the Orville, but it's no longer there, but whatever. I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but really my favorite place there on Facebook. And Mark, where can people find you when you are building the perfect bite? The perfect bite of food? Because Deanna...
Yeah, that was very confusing. Okay.
I thought I was continuing the chocolate theme, and then you were sort of complaining about it, so I thought it would be cute to tease you about it.
Well...
But it fell flat. I apologize.
I thought you were going to give me like a Geordi or a Data reference or something, and then it went back to Deanna, and my brain was like flatlined. I was like, what? Anyway, I do love chocolate, and that did look good. I don't know if it was orgasmic, but it looks good. Well, when I'm not doing that, you can find me on the BQN Collective. It's a fun place to be. If you guys haven't signed up already, come find us. It's free to sign up for the BQN Collective because it's on Facebook. So you can find me there. You can also find me on Twitter at MarkWhite207. And if you become a patron of the network on Patreon, you can listen to my show, It's Green. And it is entertaining, although it's not Star Trek related. It is still fun and interesting and something cool to listen to in your car. So please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or if you get your podcast and leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
At this time, we'd like to thank our associate producers, Mahendran Radhakrishnan and Tim Cooper. Thank you so much. And a special thanks to Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a Patreon on the network on Patreon. Join the Hive to enjoy It's Green, Amy's Math Moments, and other network perks. With a monthly subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings on the Hive Mind on the second Saturday of each month. Visit patreon.com/BQN to get all the details and watch your messages.
Thank you for listening.
We hope you'll join us as we continue to search out
all good things. I've been practicing for years.